This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and Sirius XM Channel 371.
12 shows. Do you think we can get to 500?
Yeah, I do.
How much money did you win from people who said we'd never get to?
Thousands.
Did you?
Yes, mostly from ESPN executives.
Eric McClain in a moment. Coming up bottom of the hour, if you watch College Game Day on ESPN on Saturday, I hope you got an opportunity to see this piece about Sam Hartman. If you didn't, I encourage you to stick around at 8:30. It is as good as Chris Duzan produced it. Jen Latta narrated, did the interviews. It's tremendous work, and it's really, really good.
I thought there were two specials that I saw this weekend. The one you're going to see with Sam Hartman is fabulous. And the one on ACC Network that Andrea Adelson did regarding the pit player.
Right. Trey Tipton.
Trey Tipton.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Is absolutely fantastic and an incredibly important message, really, with both of them. So no pay attention. Yep. Both of them really, really well done.
Sam Hartman's the feature from Game Day, narrated by Jen Latta, produced by Chris Duzan, coming up bottom of the hour. If you didn't see it, it's worth your time. Speaking of the Deacs, now, a little lesson for some of you folks that may be a little younger.
Wait a minute. You're going deep into the archives here.
No, not really. I'm just going to give a little historical perspective
here. That's what I'm saying.
Wake Forest is 7-0 for the first time since 1944.
Right.
Okay. Some of you may or may not know. Old-time Wake Forest folks will know. New Wake Forest folks should know. Wake Forest has always not been located in Winston-Salem.
That is correct.
It did not move campuses from outside of Raleigh, actually east of the city, to Winston-Salem until 1951-52, right?
That's right.
Right around the time the ACC was formed is when Wake Forest relocated from Wake Forest, North Carolina, to Raleigh, or to Winston-Salem, 1956. So 3 years into the league, they moved. So when we say 1944, that's at old Wake Forest. That's when they were in Raleigh or east of Raleigh, and the campus was there.
I'm with you.
Okay. Now, have you seen this 1944 schedule?
I have.
All right. Let's roll that at you here this morning. This is who they played to go 8-1 under D.C. P-Head Walker. Yeah, P-Head. Beat Carolina in Chapel Hill. Bus ride. Went on the road to Georgia. My God, look at Wake Forest.
Yeah.
14-7, the final there. Maryland, no shot. VMI, no shot. Short trip to Raleigh, Pack. How about the road game at Miami? 27 of the empty set. Clemson comes up the road. That wasn't Coach Hired, though.
No.
At Duke, the loss.
Look who broke the streak.
At Duke.
Look who broke the streak.
That's it. 20th ranked Duke.
Does history repeat itself?
I don't know.
I'm just asking.
I'm asking you.
No.
All right. By the way, you want a fun look at the old Southern Conference standings just for fun?
Of course. I was just thinking when I got out of bed this morning at
3:30. Can I get those 1944 Southern Conference standings?
Yeah, that Southern Conference thing's been on my mind.
Has it?
Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, Duke went 4-0. They won the league even though they were 6-4. Love it. I love that stuff. Wake, Clemson,
by the way,
College of William and Mary.
A little tidbit for Clemson fans here.
Sure.
1944.
Yeah.
The Tigers, 4-5, 3-1 in the league. Did you know they averaged 18.3 points a game? Just like they do now.
Oh, my gosh.
Things serious? Haven't changed.
No.
They averaged 18 a game that year.
How about that? Real quick, the Tar Heels, you see. The old 1-7-1 there at the bottom of the roster. Not good.
You know what they averaged a game?
Gene McKeever, the coach of the Tar Heels.
3.7 points a game.
Oof.
North Carolina football back in 44.
3.7?
Yeah.
Wow, that's not good.
And somehow they still lure Charlie Choo-Choo Justice to go to school there. What was going on there?
Well,
Charlie figured, hey, I could play immediately. You think that's what was going
on?
No,
here's what happened. They got everybody back from the war in 45. Choo-choo, Carl Snavely, the head coach.
That's a good point.
Yeah. I know what happened in North Carolina in 1945. The boys came back from the war. Weiner, Justice, Rizzo, all of them. They all came back.
I just hope that the folks in Switzerland show up Saturday and pack Truist Field.
Yeah.
Because they deserve it.
Let's ask Eric McClain. E-Mac, good morning. Welcome to the show. Good to see you. President's Cup shirt
and
all.
Thank you. Good to see both of you.
Did you know Wake Forest was in Wake Forest, North Carolina before Winston-Salem?
No, I didn't.
There you go. See, Pac?
Did you know your appearance was supposed to start at 8 a.m.?
Oh, I wasn't doing this to you.
Hey, guys, this has only happened to me one other time, and it was for a training session after we lost the spring game, and I set my alarm for p.m., and I get a text from Coach Joey Batson, and it says, has anyone seen Eric McClain this morning? And I almost died right there in my bed. And I got there, and he's just sitting there kind of, all right, let's go outside. And we did a couple up-downs. Thankfully, I was a senior, so he didn't take it out too hard on me. But, yeah, it was pretty funny.
I mean, I don't know who you think you are, Joe Giulio, but the show's at 8.
I was dreaming about road tripping, Pat.
Yeah,
come
that's
on,
it,
baby.
Hey. You're getting me to the airport Thursday. I'm a little concerned.
That's right.
Let me make one educated correction here. Tim Beret has told me, in fact, 1944 Pack was in fact Coach Howard.
Oh, it was.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
There we go.
We got screwed. P-Head had his own referees up there. Lost 13-0. Shoot, if I brought my cousins, we'd have beat Wake Forest by 50.
Okay, Mac. Let's dive into the Deacs here. 7-0. Here comes Duke, who will be an underdog, significant underdog on Saturday off a bye week. What do you like most about Wake Forest at 7-0? And I'm going to ask you, since you've kind of been on this route before, you got to start paying attention to your team as much as you do your opponent, right? You got to kind of regain focus, reset focus every week, I'm guessing.
Yeah, no question. It's going to be interesting because this is kind of, you know, uncharted territory for the Deacs, and especially with this, you know, team and this coaching staff. And now we're going to really have to pay attention to, how do they handle success? How do they handle winning? How do they handle the attention of being, you know, the 13th ranked team in the country? And so I think the players are in place. I think the coaching staff, you know, has the right kind of grasp and mindset on this. But, you know, does complacency start creeping in at all? And do they see a Duke team and like, you know, I don't think so. I think we'll take this week off. So I don't think that's the case at all, especially playing an in-state school. That Big Four championship, kind of state championship, playing all those schools, I think really matters to each of the North Carolina teams there. So I don't think this is the sleepwalk week at all. But, man, it's going to be interesting to see. I love the balance of North Carolina, or of Wake Forest on offense. I love the fact that they can throw it, run it. That RPO game is so fun to watch. We saw it a million times against Army in a very short window of time, and hang up a basketball score there. So that they're just impressive to watch. I will tell you, though, the one place that I don't know if concerned is the right word quite yet, but I'm paying attention to is that defense. Because preseason, that's all I would say is I know the offense is going to be good. I know they're going to score a lot of points, but can the defense, you know, do they have to score 38-plus a game to win? And these last couple of weeks, that answer has been yes. And so now that November is coming, that's the toughest part of their schedule. That defense is going to have to get back right, have to start creating those turnovers again, and just getting them extra opportunities.
Eric, I'll be even more specific. Run defense. They've given up 64 first downs the last 2 weeks. 64 and won both games. Again, yeah. Army ran for over 400. Syracuse did the same thing. And I know one thing. Here comes Duke. Mateo Durant, you know, 21 is going to touch the football. So Wake better figure out a way to tackle the man with the ball. That run defense has to get better for Wake Forest if they're going to continue this crazy streak.
Absolutely. That's exactly where I'm looking at. And it starts up front. And we saw, you know, pretty good success with that, with linebackers flying all over the place, the defensive line, you know, those linebackers led by Masterson there, and really just – it hasn't been there for whatever reason these last two games. Now, they did play, you know, two of the best rushing attacks they've seen. And of course, with what Sean Tucker can do, and this Army team was just firing on all cylinders. It was truly a thing of beauty. And I'm sure guys like Wes, who have been involved with, you know, the triple option with Georgia Tech for many years, it's a thing of beauty when you watch it done correctly. But, you know, Duke is certainly taking notes and saying, okay, this is how we want to attack these guys. And, you know, we think our running back's better than all of theirs. So if I'm Duke, I'm feeling confident about what I've seen on tape. And, you know, going into this game thinking I'm going to come out with a win.
All right. I want to pivot to Syracuse a little bit here because they get Boston College. And I want to use the platform of Syracuse's win at Virginia Tech as to what it can mean for the Orange. And how concerned are you about the Eagles now after three straight losses, Emac?
Yeah, well, looking at Cuse, I'm super excited about this team. You know, it's been such a fun team to watch. Now, I know it hasn't directly translated to wins, but, you know, this year, for the first year in a while, I've really enjoyed watching Cuse and the effort and the players that they have and the defense finally, you know, really stepping up tall. But, man, the 1-2 punch that they have found between Schrader and Garrett – and Sean Tucker is unbelievable. It's what do you stop? How can you stop it? And especially if Garrett Schrader is able to throw and deliver strikes the way that he has in this last game, it's just impressive to see. And so I'm very excited for that team. I think Sean Tucker is the best running back in the country. Does a great job with his vision, his balance, and then has enough breakaway speed to hurt you if he gets an open hole. So really excited what we're seeing from Syracuse, and think that now this confidence, okay, we got a big dub on the road, a first ACC win in quite some time. I think that can snowball and really build some confidence. And, you know, they keep going this season. And then with Boston College, as you said, Wes, it's a little scary. It's starting to really turn into a what-if season. And it's kind of been that for me for a couple of weeks. This team just can't figure out their identity. You know, we saw them be a run-heavy team a couple of weeks in a row right after the injury to Phil Dracovic. And then against Clemson and maybe a week after, okay, we're back to we have to throw it 100 times. And then now these last couple of weeks, it's just been kind of in the middle and not very good at either. And so it's disappointing. It's sad that the amount of talent that was on this team, that is on this team, that really was centered around great quarterback play, we're just probably not going to see it this year just because they're such different players, Grossell and Dracovic. And like I said, it's unfortunate. Hopefully a lot of these guys will be able to come back and play one more year with Big Phil there, hoping that he comes back. Disappointing to say the less. Injuries are a part of the game.
Eric, you just used the term snowball, and while you're saying that, we're watching highlights of Syracuse-Virginia Tech. Who would have ever thought that the Hokies, after knocking off North Carolina in week one, with the crowd, the defensive effort, the great win, that we'd be sitting here talking about the end of October, three-game losing streak, all at home, Justin Fuente feeling and hearing a bunch of noise, for the last five on the road. I mean, kind of crystal ball what you think Virginia Tech can do. Can they salvage the 21 season after the quick start?
Hard to say, Pac. Based on what I've seen, no. You know, we sat there in the basement last Friday and talked about offensive offenses, and theirs is just bad. Now, they finally found some life. They found a great running back in number 24. It came out of nowhere. They give him the ball 21 times. He goes for 150 and I think a hat trick touchdown. So maybe that is a breath of fresh air. Maybe that is a new answer. But, you know, up until that moment, the offense was so stagnant. And, you know, so can they build on that? Can they capitalize on that and find a way to save this season, find a way to try to get to postseason play, get to a bowl? It's going to be difficult. And I think unless they truly can ride that freshman and say, hey, look, let's get this thing going, the answer is no, because up, like I said, up until that point, it was such bad offensive production.
All right, we got to take a break. I will say this. Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech on Saturday in Atlanta feels like really spicy stuff. I mean, it doesn't have a lot of implications, but it's two teams looking for a win. I mean, two teams that are like, hey, we got to go find us one. So, interesting note there.
Does a winner go to a bowl game?
Ooh.
Well, we got 10 of the 14 teams in the league with either three or four W's. You know, who's going to come out of that group?
The glob. I
mean, there will be somebody that gets on a run. I mean, somebody's going to end the season feeling good about life, I assume. But your guess is as good as mine of that group. Who's going to do it?
When we come back on this program, friends, Eric McLean offers his accounting. And we're going to ask him exactly what he knows about the cross-country championships and his responsibilities at said event. When Packer and Durham continues on a Tuesday on ACCN.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham.
What's
wrong with you?
Nothing. Not a thing, sir.
You don't want to come to South Bend with us?
No. We're sending our attaché, Eric McLean, with you to South Bend. Eric's good enough to spend time with us on a Tuesday.
By the way.
Look at him. All smiles right now, let alone he has yet to get on an American Airlines flight with you.
Oh, yeah. Me and American Airlines are tight.
Look at Mac.
I forgot about the bad luck that Pack has. Hey. Oh, gosh. I got to change my flight.
Eric's never been to South Bend.
You know what? He's never been on American Airlines with you.
I haven't.
Never been to South Bend.
Hey, how long were we delayed coming home from the college football playoff time?
3 days.
That's right. And what were we flying?
Let's not talk it into existence.
Yeah.
Let's not talk it into existence.
Remember those raps you were doing in studio last week with ESPN2? You can forget that on Saturday. You'll just be arriving at Bradley International.
Hey, Eric, don't worry about it. If American Airlines can't handle it, we have the Chariot of Champions.
Oh, yeah. That's it. Mac, let me ask
you.
Just off the top here, what do you think your primary objective is from the time you land Thursday night to the time you take off, hopefully Friday afternoon, to fly to Bristol or Hartford or parts in between? What do you think your number one objective and responsibility is?
To get Pack the keys to drive the Rabbit. That's my number one goal and objective.
That's happening. Okay. That's going to happen.
All right.
Yeah.
Think about your career in broadcasting, though, first, Eric. What else do you think is your primary objective?
We're going to cover this ACC championship to the best that you have ever seen, and it's going to be unbelievable.
Boy, you're just diving right on in with the old Pac-Man, aren't you?
Do you think the Chariot of Champions has a license plate? Because I may take that thing on the road.
Yeah. Yeah. How about
just saying.
That?
Smart. I think we should.
Oh,
I think
boy.
We should.
Great. Now you've got a partner in crime. I can sense you boys are
teeing
up.
We're coming to your city.
Yeah, yeah. Eric, let me just give you one piece of advice with the Pac-Man. He is clearly one that doesn't ask for permission and is okay asking for forgiveness after said event occurs, right?
Forgiveness, yeah.
Okay.
We're still standing, aren't we?
Yeah. I mean, this is how we ended up in Mike Krzyzewski's office.
Yeah, and how'd that work
doing
out?
Doing a show.
How'd that work out?
Worked out fine.
It worked out perfectly.
Okay.
No faith. He had no faith in me. I said, I'm going to pull this off. You wait and see.
We're going to do it. We're
going to do this, too.
So you think you're going to take the rabbit to Jack Swarbrick's office?
I'm going to just tell you ahead of time.
Okay.
See if somebody can do anything about it.
All right.
I'm going to take it off the road. I'm going to take it in your campus. They're going to say, you know, the race starts at 10. Have we seen Pack? Yeah, he left about 20 minutes ago going that way. Just tell me what I'm going to do.
All right. Look out is right.
You know.
Look out.
Good luck. I'm going to be on the road. And I tell you what, here's the other thing I'm going to tell you ahead of time. On Friday when you're watching this show, I promise you, I will be somewhere on that campus driving the Chariot of Champions, and they won't know where I am. I'm going to be like, I'm going. Mac, you handle it. I'm taking this sucker for a ride. Just going to tell you that.
The ACC Network beacon will be going off. It's going to be in the middle of campus, but Pac, he took it off. He's going to be somewhere else.
I still have my ACC Network monitor on my ankle. So I'm leaving Mecklenburg County. I'm getting in the Chariot of Champions. I'm going to drive around campus like I used to. 30-some-odd years ago.
It's time.
When I was first time out at my first job, walking around that campus. I know my way around South Bend.
All right. We say Godspeed, Eric McLean, as we go to accounting.
It's going to be great.
All right.
No rules.
Yeah. All right, Mac, let's go. Accounting time. And like you.
Oh, buddy.
We also have the Swiss at one.
Oh, good. I'm glad we all agreed on that. A lot of movement for me this week, and a lot of fans you know, kind of disappointed in UNC, thinking that they need to be higher. I need to see it. I got to see it. You got to prove it on the field, and a good opportunity for you to jump. But, you know, I look at teams like Louisville. I look at teams like FSU just rising really quickly and going to be interesting to see, can they continue to do that throughout the year, or is that glob going to just keep moving people around, kind of pushing people to the top and then bringing them back down? It'll be very interesting to see how does that finish out the rest of this year. But I think 1, 2, and 3, we probably can all agree with those.
Yeah, Wake, Pitt, Virginia, NC State 4, Clemson 5, Louisville 6, Florida State 7, then goes Syracuse, Miami, Georgia Tech, Boston College, North Carolina, Virginia Tech, and Duke. Let me say this part for the congruency of the trio here. The first three for each of us, well, Eric and I each have Wake, Pitt, Virginia. Pac's got NC State 3rd, ahead of Virginia. The bottom two, we all have the same.
We all have the same top 8 teams.
Just in different order.
Just a little bit,
that's good.
Slightly different order. Top 8 teams, we all agree.
That's the glob for you.
All right.
We all agree on 14 and 13 with Duke and Virginia Tech.
Yeah. Eric, let me... What team's got the best chance to come out of the second half and make a run here in the last, 5 weeks of the season? You sense there's anybody who can build momentum? Because see, with everybody kind of being in that glob, I think it makes it more difficult to discern who's got the best chance to move forward.
I agree with you, but I will say, and this is very strange to say after the start that we saw, but what we're seeing right now from Florida State, if you're a Florida State fan, is very exciting. I mean, they just had one of the best Octobers in regards to improvement that we maybe have ever seen. And figuring out who your team is, locking in, not making silly mistakes, not making silly penalties like they were in the first 4 games there, and honestly look like a totally different team. Now, is that lightning in a bottle? Did they just happen to have one of the greatest months in quite some time? Maybe, you know, moving forward, they got a big test this weekend that, you know, honestly, two teams that aren't who they want to be, not where they want to be, but going to be a battle for sure. And what does the momentum look like if you get that victory? So Florida State, surprisingly enough, is a team that is just getting really, really hot right now and going to be very interesting to see moving forward. Can this be one of the greatest turnarounds that we've ever seen after starting 0-4?
I just like the fact they've cut down on penalties, they're not turning the ball over, and they're running the football. I mean, really basic fundamental things that good teams do, and they were able to do it after a horrific start where some of their fans were wearing bags on their heads. I mean, these guys have really bought into what Mike Norvell is doing. Now, granted, this week there's a different energy. You're on the road. A little animosity between these two from a year ago since they did not play the game in Tallahassee. Clemson offensively is still a train wreck. I don't know if they get that thing figured out. You'd have to say, hey, it is what it is after 8 weeks. But I think there'll be some excitement in Death Valley this weekend, given the fact that these two teams seemingly feel like they're kind of going in different directions. Clemson can't figure out the offense. Florida State feeling better about life. I think we'll add to the intrigue 3:30 on Saturday in the Valley.
I agree 100% with you. And just seeing the style, as you mentioned, the style of play, the fact that they're saying, okay, we're really good at running the football. Let's do it. And I've been screaming and shouting for it to get the ball to Corbin Moore. I still think there's more that they can do there. But, you know, JT is such a special player and a guy that can just create a lot of things out of nothing. You know, we talk about those sack numbers and how they have plummeted. Well, a lot of that is because you have such a mobile and electric quarterback back there. So I'm loving what they're doing. Can they continue to build on it? I think that'll be the next step in that maturity process, and we'll find out very quickly.
Boy, a win at Clemson for Florida State would be a remarkable statement about the last 6 weeks of football, five weeks of football. I mean, you put it into perspective, Eric, you're right. Not only it would be maybe one of the best months in college football history for a team.
Whoa. That's a strong statement.
They were 0-4. They're 0-4
in the history of the game.
Yeah,
a month.
They're horrible. Horrible.
I mean, seriously, Eric, if they win Saturday, and I'm not saying they will. But if they win, biggest word in sports, I hear.
If is the biggest word in sports.
I mean, you talk about what they're doing? Crazy, right?
I don't think it's crazy to say it's one of the best turnarounds in sports. Now, maybe not to say the best month just because of, you know, they're not playing ranked teams, they're not beating ranked teams. But, you know, if they do this, if they're able to get the victory, I don't think there's any question that it's one of the best turnarounds that we've seen in college football.
Go ahead.
All right, before we go, in your opinion, because it's purely a guess, who is the starting quarterback for Clemson Saturday?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
It's going to be interesting to see. You know, is it truly going to be a competition? You know, I know we've heard that. I think DJ still will be it. And maybe even that helps. You know, maybe there was a little bit of complacency of, you know, saying, okay, it's my job no matter what I can do. And now that that's been challenged, maybe they ran out Tyson a couple of times in practice, or will. It's only Tuesday. Maybe today they run Tyson out first all day long, and maybe that, you know, puts a little fire under DJ and gets him going. But the biggest thing with all of this is remember that this is a game, Clemson. Remember that this is meant to be fun, that it's supposed to be easy to play a game. Don't make offense so hard. And so if they can revert back to, you know, just backyard football, to win the purest form of football, which is high school, just go back to that and just play. You know, can that make a difference this year, or is it just going to take an offense or a off season and maybe some personnel changes to get them going? But Pack, I still think DJ is going to be the one that runs out first.
All right, Eric McClain.
I'll see you Thursday night.
Oh,
prepare
boy.
Yourself. We're traveling.
That's right.
Road
no
trip,
doubt, man.
Road trip.
It's an excellent opportunity to remind you that assuming Eric is not afflicted with Packeritis when it comes to traveling on American Airlines, he'll be part of the Huddle Friends on Saturday morning. Yes, the kickoff to ACC football in Week 9 begins at 10 a.m. presented by Marathon. Jordan Cornette, the co-host of Sports Nation, slides over with Coach Rick, EJ Manuel, and Eric McClain to get you ready for a big weekend of ACC football. When we come back from College Game Day on Saturday, the story of Sam Hartman and why number 10 is number 10 for the Demon Deacons of Wake Forest. All that and more after you see this on ACC Network.
Packer and Durham. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham, again, Otto in the back, got Ron, Rob, Chester, Fuller, cast of thousands, smart people up here in Bristol.
Yep. If you missed this on Saturday, I'm glad we've got an opportunity to replay this piece with Sam Hartman. Produced by Chris Duzan, Jen Latta narrates. This is a story about the player you see and how he became that guy, not only as a football player, but as a person. And the number 10, Sam has an adopted brother. He and his mom adopted a brother who got to know Sam through football. And the story unfolds. And it's an inspiration story for Sam today through tragedy.
When I put on my jersey, it's something that I'm proud of. You know, I never want to have a day where I don't feel like he's with me. Like, that's my brother. Like, that's my family.
Wake Forest quarterback Sam Hartman has been impressing people with his football skills for years. But growing up in North Carolina, he says the person he cared most about impressing was Demetri Allison.
He came over to our house when I was like at fourth, fifth grade. My dad brought him over to kind of just have him hang out. He just transferred into the school that I was going to.
He was struggling. He lived in a house with his grandmother and his cousin and didn't have a lot of the resources. We came up with a plan. It was for him to be with us from Sunday until Friday, and we would take him back. And we went and met his grandmother, Miss Virginia. She agreed to let, you know, Demetri start kind of living with us.
Demetri was 15 and starting high school. Despite the Hartman sons, Joe and Sam, being in middle school, the three boys quickly bonded.
Sam really looked up to Demetri because he was a good athlete. Dimitri would run routes for Sam in the backyard so Sam could practice. And I think that made Sam a lot better because he was running routes to somebody quite a few years older.
I used to be like, you know, how many brothers do you have? I had one, like my real brother, and then, but now it's always just like, you know, I got two older brothers.
Dimitri ended up living with the Hartmans for all 4 years of high school. He went on to play college football at nearby Elon University in North Carolina. On November 6th, 2015, during Dimitri's junior year, Sam was making a run at an undefeated high school football season and a state title.
We had family in town to watch Joe and Sam play in their semifinal game. And then we went on Saturday to watch Elon play. And we went to dinner with Dimitri and his girlfriend and all of the family. He seemed incredibly happy. I just wish I knew that he was struggling. That's the worst part, is I just wish I knew.
3 days later, Mark Hartman received a call from the head coach at Elon.
Dimitri did not go to the 6 a.m. lift, and he didn't go to meetings, and then he missed his class, and no one can get a hold of him. And as Mark was talking to the coach on his cell phone, I waved goodbye to Mark and drove up there because that was not Dimitri.
As Lisa Hartman searched for Dimitri with several of his teammates, she was able to reach him on the phone.
I was begging him to just come home, and he didn't have to worry about football or school, to just come home and we could all regroup and figure things out. And I asked him if he knew how much I loved him, and he said, "I know you love me and I love you." That was the last conversation that we had.
On November 11th, 2015, Dimitri Allison took his own life. He was 21 years old.
He left us a note. He was very distraught, but it came on so fast, and we don't know why.
I'm never going to see him again. And that was tough. And I just went out on our dock and just sat there for basically all night.
We had a state championship football game that Friday. We looked to the boys and we said, "You're done. You don't have to do anything."
I remember him saying to me, "I'm playing in the game, Mom. I've got to."
I think Dimitri would have been mad if, you know, I didn't play. There was just something inside me that knew that the only way I'm getting through this, I mean, it was something I'd never felt before, of like a confidence and a feeling of just, you know, pure almost bliss of he's there watching and he's proud of me.
That night, Sam did something to honor his brother.
I saw somebody walking towards me that was in a number 10. And I thought, oh, that's Dimitri's number. And I was thinking, I don't remember there being a 10. And it was Sam.
With a heavy heart and Dimitri's number on his chest, Sam led his team to the state title.
That night, he was there. Best football game Sam's ever played. And Sam had Dimitri's jersey on.
You know, every time I put it on from then on was always just kind of that remembrance of him and that kind of moment of he's watching over.
I think that it has made Sam more focused and driven.
Pressure coming. Hartman to the end zone. And it is caught for the touchdown. And Wake Forest walks it off.
Because there's so many times that D's out there with them. so they're doing it together.
That's a great piece.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and it's a unique tie to a lot of things that have happened with Sam Hartman, obviously, but also in the Wake Forest program. A couple of backstories that didn't make the piece that are interesting, and we were just talking about, because it kind of is a Charlotte-based type deal. Some folks may remember Will Grier, right, quarterback at West Virginia. His dad, Chad, was Demetri Allison's Pop Warner football coach. And Sam Hartman's dad is also kind of a football coach. And Demetri played Pop Warner for Chad, broke his arm. Sam Hartman's dad did the surgery to help Demetri. Okay, so there you go, that kind of thing. Mark Hartman, Sam's dad, is from Regal. His mom has adopted people in the past. That's why Mark and his wife felt compelled to reach out and help with Demetri Allison. The impact that it's had on the Wake program is interesting, too. Chris Duzan, who produced the piece, said that Dave Clawson said the biggest change he's seen in Sam from last year to this year is his mental game, his ability to throw a bad pass, forget about it, and move on. Wake also, and this is something we can remember for our next visit, Wake has also developed the sports psychology, the meditation, the yoga side of it, the mental state of the game. In a year coming off where everybody was challenged that way, Pac?
Well, how often when we were doing the COVID shows did we talk about mental health, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it's one thing when you're 18 to 22 years old. It's another thing when you're a grown adult. And
right.
still, I mean, it's part of the deal.
Yeah.
Right? Yep. Mental health. And I'm not sure we talk about that enough, quite frankly. We always talk about games, wins, losses. Right. Coach is in trouble. Coach is doing a great job. Yada yada yada.
Mm-hmm.
But that whole mental health issue, Wes, is a real deal. And
absolutely.
I'm not even talking about sports now. I'm just talking about going about your business and making sure you're okay.
Right.
And there is help for you. I mean, if you're out there watching us this morning
mm-hmm.
and going through some tough times, because you never know what your next door neighbor is going through. Right.
That's it.
But there are obviously chances for you to find help. So take advantage of it if you can.
And I can tell you that having been a graduate there, my brother still works on campus at Elon, close to the football program, but the role he has with Learfield and doing the games and doing things like that from a sponsorship perspective, that situation impacted that program, as you might suspect.
I can imagine.
In a way that changed its course a little bit too.
You know, I mentioned the Trey Tipton story, which was also fantastic. Which, if you watched ACC Network in mm-hmm. the Huddle,
yep.
It aired, and Andrew Adelson did a tremendous job. And it's about mental health, and yep. It's one of those things that I don't think that we as the collective media have done a good enough job to understand that folks say, listen, there's a lot of folks under a lot of pressure.
Mm-hmm.
That COVID changed everything in terms
right.
of the pandemic, jobs, the lack thereof, being able to see people, socializing. There's a lot of folks under a stress, and we were down there goofing around in the basement cutting up.
Mm-hmm.
But there are means to find help. So maybe we have the time to play that Trey Tipton story, because it is really, really well done.
Yep.
Two great stories this week on Game Day and the ACC Network.
Absolutely. And thanks to Jen Ladd and Chris Duzan for a great job. Doozy, job well done,
yep.
son.
Excellent.
Way to go. All right, on the other side, back to football and back to percentages. Yep, Pac, I got some percentages. Except this is not your friends down the hall anymore.
Good.
At FPI. Bill Connelly, S&P Plus. Percentages? Your team's going bowling, Pac.
50-50. You're either you are or you're not. How about that? Straighten the whole thing out for you.
Back after this.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham from the basement. Show 488. Many thanks to Eric McClain. Up and moving this morning. Joining us 8:05-ish, give or take. Accounting is out, fan accounting, that's tomorrow.
Yeah, it is.
So, folks, you can still participate and come up with your list, whether it be the typical 14 teams or get creative with the Sweet 16.
Right.
However you want to handle it, it's up to you. But we've got some other stuff for you before we get out here today.
Bill Connelly and the S&P Plus rankings are out for the chance your team has to go to postseason.
I told you the answer. It's 50-50. You either are going to go or you're not.
All right, let's dial it up, kids. Here we go. This is not FPI. This is a whole nother game.
These are actual professionals.
This guy knows what he's doing.
Yeah, Bill knows what
Bill
he's doing.
Bill knows what he's doing.
I bet him on radio. He's pretty good.
He is very good. Clemson's 99.8. The other three are 100%. Pitt, Virginia, Wake Forest. Well, I'd hope so. They're bowl eligible.
Mac Brown, you know, he's sitting there whining he's only favored against Wofford. I see that number up there at 94%. So yeah. Bill's feeling pretty good about the Heels, whether it be Notre Dame on the road or
Pitt's on the road,
NC State on the road. So Bill's feeling that the Heels got something up the sleeve there. 94%.
Wake Forest at home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bill's thinking they're going to win two of those.
Isaac Azumba, Zumba, Zumba. Right? He's all. Bill's got the band going.
Is he a graduate from North Carolina? Do we know?
No, I think he's a Midwest guy.
No, how about that?
Louisville, 83.5%. BC, 76.5%. Miami, 65.5%. Syracuse, 50.2%.
See, I would say that from my perspective, Bill is 100% right about Pitt, Virginia, and Wake because they've already locked and loaded the bowl.
Sure.
And he's 100% right about Syracuse. 50%. Everybody else, he's just throwing darts. Everybody else
just
is throwing darts.
Darts.
I mean, I could come up with numbers.
He's
you'd go,
just
oh,
throwing darts.
FBI, free Packer information right
yeah,
there.
That's it.
I mean, there's teams that have already qualified, and then there's Syracuse, is 50%. They're either going to make it or they're not. That's it.
All right.
I don't know why you guys make this. This is why you have problems
I'm
with
sorry,
math.
Bill.
You have to understand how math works. You're either in or you're out for the bowl business. 50%. We've got 10 of 14 teams with 3 or 4 wins. If you're crying out loud. Am I confusing you with the numbers now?
No, I'm just going to let you
Mr.
finish.
Mr. Elon, I'm done.
I'm letting you finish.
I'm
you
done.
Good?
Go for it.
Do you know that Clemson had a streak of 53 straight games without a 10-point loss?
I did. And then when they did lose by double digits, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that's the day Deshaun Watson got hurt at Georgia Tech.
Yeah, it was. 28-3 was the final there.
Yeah, and he got hurt early.
Yeah, did. Either opening drive or drive after that.
Well, I think they had the lead. He went down. Mm-hmm. And I got news for Georgia Tech.
28-6, I'm sorry.
If he didn't get hurt, y'all would have lost that game too. Just saying. He wasn't going to lose Georgia Tech. Mm-mm. Not that guy.
Kind of a big old matter-of-fact statement.
Well, that is a matter-of-fact.
Yeah, that's a good one, yeah. Since 2014... Here's how many times each team has lost a conference game by 10 or more.
This is a
only in the regular season.
Is a crazy stat.
Look at this. Clemson 2. Pitt 10, Miami 13, Virginia Tech 15. Sometimes these stats are a little more informative than they need to be for some, right, Pac?
It's a bar bet right here. This is a crazy stat.
10 or more in conference play. Look I think the 20s.
Yeah, there's a 30 up there as well. But I think the most interesting number of that group that's on the screen right there is that Pittsburgh's at 10. I think that, you know, to me, Pittsburgh is always the team when we start talking about what have you done in this league.
Right.
Nobody ever seems to remember what Pittsburgh's done. You know, when you start talking about, you know, conference wins.
Right.
That stat right there.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask the fan on the side of the road, very few people would answer Pittsburgh.
Right.
Very few. I wonder why that is.
Because I think it's a little Swiss-ish.
Excuse me? Is that a word?
Well, no, it might
Swiss-ish?
Be here. Well,
you are you going to use that Saturday?
No. You use the analogy about Wake Forest and the Swiss. I think people, like, for instance, you use the example all the time. Pitt has a ton, not a little bit. They got a ton of football tradition.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
No question.
But if you were to ask somebody in the ACC, name the top three football tradition, Pitt arguably has as much football tradition as anybody in this league.
And it's forgotten about.
Correct.
By many, not by the folks in Pittsburgh.
That's it. But outside of our buddy Paul Zeiss and Bill Hillgrove and Pat Bostic and these guys that cover Pitt, I think – because they've only been in the league a relatively short time, people don't realize how competitive the situation's been for Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
It's been really competitive. They've done a tremendous job. And let me tell you this, the stroke of genius is they have gone, they went Paul Chris Pat Narduzzi. They did the heavy lifting. They found a guy that could also build that program and stay on course. That's why I think they're having the season they're having now. They're taking advantage of the opportunity. But when you look at competitive games, they're always in the game because of the way they play. Typically, it's been defensive driven. This year, with all the supplies and inventory Whip's got offensively and a line that has been developing as the season goes on, I think that's why you look at that stat and go, how about that?
Yeah. It's a good bar bet. And I'll also say, I say it all the time in college football, if you don't have a dude under center who can make plays, there's a ceiling on your football team.
How about Miami's 13, though? That's another indicator. They've had years, but for everybody who talks it down sometimes, Miami's 13, Virginia Tech's 15. Florida State's been through a dip. Looks like they might be on the way out. But the 2 and then the 10 from Pittsburgh, who do you think would guess Pitt second?
That's what I'm saying. I think very few people outside of Pittsburgh could answer that question.
Right.
On the side of the street.
I'm with you.
You're an ACC fan? Yeah, I am. Okay, well, let me ask you a question. I think very few people would have said Pittsburgh, number 2.
Feel free to take this one to your place of business, your lunch, or whatever with folks and say, they ran a stat this morning about Clemson and consecutive conference losses by 10 or more. Since 2014, Clemson's had 2. Who do you think's second? You'll get everybody under the sun before you get Pittsburgh.
Which is an indicator that no one is watching the program.
There you go. All right.
Because if you watch the show, your buddy would ask you that question, go, hey, you're a moron. Don't you watch Packer and Durham? The answer is Pitt. And in the number is 10.
Yeah.
Miami's third with 13.
That's it.
That's a good question, though.
All right.
Like it.
We're going to the 9 o'clock hour, and here's a thought to get you through the break. We're going to ask questions. When was the last time? Like, for instance, Brennan Armstrong leads this league in passing. When was the last time Virginia had the ACC's passing leader? Think about it. Some of you are going to have to think hard. I'll tell you this. It's not Matt Schaub. Power Hour next with Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham.